So a little bit more on the kind of functional side of money then, we can, so I've just argued that, well, money can be understood as kind of rule-bound computational unit of account, which it allows for the management and exploitation of uncertainty and a corresponding binding of time through facilitating retention and pretension. Okay, so it's a memory device. It's a device that enables memory, but also enables pretension or, you know, betting, speculation on the future. So there are three basic functions of memory here as a considered as a transaction machine or nominal unit of account. Those are pricing, circulation, and safety. So as a In its function as pricing, it's a nominal unit of count. So, for example, it allows for the expression of the quantitative worth of some object in another medium. Okay, so just like commodity money does. In its function as circulation, it affords a procedure to obtain payment. In its function as safety, it allows for a procedure for settling balances and also as a buffer against uncertainty. Uncertainties of future. Okay, so having said this kind of very compressed genealogical and functional account of money, I want to now move on to kind of more economic level. Okay, so neoclassical economics based in what we might call market objectivity. So it assumes the neutrality of money, the exhaustive enumerability of all possible states of the world, and the sovereignty and market isolation of the economic agent, the Homo economicus. So basically, agents are considered as disconnected, they have equal information access, and they're effectively given unlimited computational power. So they have global rationality. And that means that effectively their expectations are aligned, and you get this perfect information and perfect competition. Okay. Heterodox theories take the opposite kind of tack in some way. So they argue for that economic agents are first of all social and technical rather than self-sufficient rational agents. They're involved in the process of social and technical individuation, in power struggles, contingent cultural histories. They communicate using inherited knowledge and so on. And so they have strategic rather than parametric rationality. And so the basic thing there again, so it will be imperfect information, imperfect competition, uncertainty, and self-referentiality. So competition amongst models rather than referring to some fundamental thing. Right? But then, so both of these models, I think, you know, well, I follow Sheikh here, Anwar Sheikh, in arguing that both of these end up viewing economy through an imperfectionist lens. So neoclassical economics assumes ideal perfection and then throws a bucket full of grits at it, you know, throws imperfections at it in order to get closer to the truth. And heterodox theories kind of argue for imperfection, but by attacking perfect competition, they kind of presuppose it as an ideal state. So instead, Sheikh has this idea of real competition, which is antagonistic by nature. So it is characterized by information asymmetries, by market manipulation, by conflict, cooperation, deception, subterfuge, sabotage, all of these things. So information, misinformation, and disinformation have equal sway. And okay, so that has a those theoretical points have a effect at the level of how we're going to track economic dynamics, right? So orthodox economic theory understands the competitive free market as having a statistical tendency towards fair price formation, efficient resource allocation, and reduction of unnecessary costs in production or distribution. So as supply meets demand, prices should converge at an equilibrium point that's essentially beneficial for both parties of the transaction. And that supposedly kind of reflects the true value of the commodity. So I would argue that this is this kind of follows, or we can say philosophically, this is basically following a substance ontology, right? So the idea here is that value is conceived as an invariant that is conserved over the variations of price, okay? Together with also money seen as a substance, a thing, which has the strange property of liquidity. So instead of that general outlook, we can apply a process ontology where money is seen as a formal unit of account and value is understood as a derivative to the price process. So the price process can be analyzed at into various levels. Okay, so firstly, there's the two circuits of capital, which Marx defined. So you've got MCM and CMC. So whether you're selling your labor to get money to buy commodities, or whether you're investing capital to get extra profit, that those two circuits are defined by capital and by the labor market. So the commodity division of labor with wage relation, which is the distinct difference that you have in capital as opposed to pre-capitalist economies. So those are two kind of levels there. And then we've got also the two levels here between a micro dynamics and macro dynamics of the economy, and between the market, which is a kind of first order self-referential system, and the financial market, which is a kind of second order self-referential system where we are betting on bets. when we follow this kind of theory of real competition, which is actually kind of Shake is aligning more with classical theories, so with Marx and Ricardo and Smith. The idea is that real competition leads to turbulent regulation of the economy. So we have kind of equilibration as a dynamic process around moving centers of gravity, which are considered as emergent properties of the economic, the macro economy. And in order to kind of understand this, the politics here, I need to go into some probability theory. Okay, so there was a big debate in early 20th century concerning the nature of, or 19th to 20th century, concerning what, the nature of probability, whether it could be understood under a frequency account or as in terms of evidence over hypothesis. And this is something that Anna also spoke about earlier. So one of the principal kind of theorists of the frequency account was Richard von Mises. So he defined randomness in terms of the impossibility of a betting strategy, so a martingale that would increase your riches, right? And Kolmogorov based, followed this idea. So the Kolmogorov theory of randomness is based on this in some way. But also this became entrenched into economic dogma. So Ludwig von Mises, who's Richard's brother, kind of made this argument against socialist central planning on the basis of this theory. So the idea is that since there's no betting strategy that's better than the market is the most kind of, the market gives the best price. And this is kind of further theorized by Hayek under the notion of catalaxy. So the market kind of computes the best price given all present knowledge. So the competition amongst models kind of has this emergent price, computation of price, right? You can never get a better price. You know, whatever the market says is the price, you couldn't say better than that, right? The market always wins. Okay, so this is going to be, so as Anna, I think, also described earlier, Carnap had this, define this in terms of probability one. Okay, so this is hypothesis over evidence, and probability two, which is the relative frequency account. Now, more recent theorists have argued that we can synthesize those two aspects of probability under a theory of pricing, right? So we can think of them both as where under us kind of this idea that price, there's a primacy of pricing over probability.